Hey everybody, Chris Fafalius here. If you enjoy One Hit Thunder, which I'm assuming you do considering you're listening to it right now, I want to tell you about another great music podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. It's called Riffs on Riffs. On this season of Riffs on Riffs, hosts Toby Braswell and Joe Watson are breaking down one iconic pop song each week. Everything from Taylor Swift's Cruel Summer to Journey's Don't Stop Believin' to Naughty by Nature's OPP. Each week, they crack open the song, trace its history, decode those cryptic lyrics, and unearth the hidden gems in its musical DNA. Not only do they dive into the song's history, lyrics, and impact, they also go down some fun and oftentimes hilarious rabbit holes. So yeah, if you're a fan of One Hit Thunder, I think you'll also enjoy Riffs on Riffs. So go hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We often forget that artists might tune into One Hit Thunder to hear us offer our sometimes misinformed and always overly opinionated thoughts on their music. One of these artists, John Hampson of 9 Days, was gracious enough to not only listen to our episode on Absolutely Story of a Girl, but also to kindly send us a series of tweets correcting some things we didn't get quite right. A few years later, he's here with us to discuss a band that he spent a lot of time with on the road back in the day. Does Stroke Nine's Little Black Backpack make John want a tango, or does this catchy pop rock classic make him want to bash his head in? Stay tuned to find out.
One hit is all you need to make the money guaranteed. Live off royalties forever. And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder, or is it one hit thunder?
John, welcome to the show. We're really excited to have you, man, because we've actually talked about one of your songs on One Hit Thunder before, and I think that we've made this connection because you listened to the episode, which sometimes can be a good thing and sometimes can be a bad thing on One Hit Thunder. But I don't think we took you to task, right?
No, and you guys should never censor yourselves, you know. So it was good. I remember. How long ago was that? I was trying to remember.
It was like one of our first 20 episodes. This is going to be episode 160. Okay. So it was a while ago.
See, I remember listening to that, and I maybe I've got the time mixed up, but was it during quarantine?
Yep.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, for sure.
Because I used to go on these epic, probably like a lot of people, just these epic long walks. Yeah. I mean, like for miles, just walk because there was nothing to do. And I remember listening to that on one of those walks and, you know, just kind of laughing and smiling, like you're eavesdropping on a conversation kind of.
about you.
About me. And then I'm like making notes. I'm like, okay, that's wrong. That's right. Let me let them know. So it was
You
it was
sent
fun.
Us like... 7 tweets, I want to say, in a series of like 7 tweets, you're like, hey, love the episode, want to clear up some things.
I don't remember what they were, but I remember doing it.
If I did enough digging, I could find it because I immediately took screenshots of all of it and shared it to the Facebook group and was just like, guys, just want to clear up some things about the recent 9 Days episode.
Well, John, I'll tell you, in recent episodes, we had a run where we always assume that. Well, I don't assume this anymore, but we always assume that the bands or artists that we're doing the episodes about aren't going to hear them. We had a string of episodes. It must have been 5 in a row, Matt, right? Where every single one, it started with Jan Arden. Do you know who Jan Arden is?
Sure, yeah, I do, actually.
Insensitive, We did an episode about it, and we like the song, but we had a lot of fun with that one. And her fans went, she posted, like, should I listen to this? And posted a link to it, and her fans went crazy on us. And then it was Lucas from Lucas with the Lid Off, if you remember that song.
Uh-huh. And then BB Mac came at us.
BB Mac was not happy.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But anyway, we really appreciate the interaction. And, John, I got to start off by telling you, first of all, I'm a 9 Days fan. In fact, I think I love absolutely Story of a Girl, but I think I like If I Am even better. When I had that album, I'm like, this is the jam. Can't believe that wasn't a hit as well. That's an amazing song.
You and me both. So I'll jump in on that one. I remember when, you know, we put the album out and everything, and in my mind, I'm always the guy that it's not usually the hit that gets me into a band. It's like the follow-up or another song, you know, that I go, oh, I love these guys. And I just really thought, oh man, once we put If I Am out, that's when people are going to really get it. And it just didn't happen. You know, it's one of those things where there's that famous quote, right? The best laid plans of mice and men oft go awry. And that's just all it is. You know, you have a plan, but in the end, there's so many factors that you rarely do things go according to plan. Right. So it just doesn't happen.
And John, I saw a quote from you. I saw it on Wikipedia, so I don't know if it's true, but it was basically something along the lines of, if absolutely Story of a Girl is the one hit we have, then we did it and I can fix up my truck. It was something along those lines. I don't know if you actually said that or if someone made that up, but I love that because... here, anyone playing the One Hit Thunder drinking game? I'm about to say it. I would love to have one hit. We celebrate having a hit here. Yeah. And also, we'll note there are a lot of bands that we consider legendary bands who are, in fact, one-hit wonders. The Grateful Dead. Yeah. They only had one hit. The Mighty Mighty Boss Stones. Yeah, Mighty Mighty Boss Stones. They only had one hit.
We just did an episode on T-Rex.
Yeah. T-Rex.
Oh, my God. Yeah, sure.
So
Mark Bolan, right?
Yeah. Wow. Did we learn a lot about him? I didn't know. He's like the ultimate rock and roll story. But, John, I got to talk to you about this. Matt brought it up to me. I saw it in the theaters. It was the first movie I saw back when I was like, okay, it's okay to go back to a theater. Right. I went and saw Everything Everywhere All at Once, which, by the way, when we're recording this today, they announced all the Oscar nominees.
Yeah.
And it's one of the Best Picture nominees, as it should be.
Yeah, rightfully so.
I think I haven't seen all 10 movies. I think it's better than Banshees of Inisherin for sure. And that seems to be one people are like really hyping up. I thought that was okay. You can watch it on HBO Max. It's okay. I watched half of Tar. I guess I got to watch the second half because the first half didn't do a lot for me. Everything Everywhere All at Once. Not only do I think it's the best movie of the year, it's in my top 20 movies ever, probably. I walked out of a movie theater being like, that was incredible. And your song is a part of it. That is insane. How did that come about and how exciting was that for you?
We could talk for a long time on this one, but I'll try to give you a truncated version. First of all, it is one of, I don't know, I can't number them, but it's one of the coolest things I've ever have happened or been a part of. I mean, by far, you know, it's in the top handful of things. I'm a huge movie fan, film fan, whatever you want to call it. The shortest version I can give you, and I'll try, like literally almost 2 years ago. And there's so many things that are weird about this that I feel like I can't leave out, but I was going to get gas. And there's a point to this. So I was at a particularly rough stretch of time. I don't remember why. I had teenagers at the time. They're still teenagers, but, you know, so maybe that was it. But I was thinking to myself, man, the universe has got to even out here. Something good's got to happen. This has just been, you know, too stressful. 30 seconds later, I pull up to the gas pump and I get an email and it's from my publisher saying, hey, you know, these directors, the Daniels, want to use your song in their film. I'm like, there you go, universe. This is awesome. You know, I read it and you saw the film. So imagine reading the synopsis yeah. of that in one single paragraph. I'm like, what in God's name is this film? I don't understand, but I knew the director of film, Swiss Army Man, and A24 yeah. Pictures. I had seen a bunch of their films. I'm like, these guys are legit. This is legit. I'm excited. Initially, I don't remember any exactly how it came up, but I knew they were going to want to manipulate the song. Mm-hmm. And at first it was just, hey, will I give them permission? And I basically, I would say twice a week, would email my publisher like, hey, remind them I'm a film fan. I'd love to do this. I'd love to be involved. Right. And eventually they asked me if I would rewrite Story of a Girl. They sent me a couple of scenes and they were like, we just want it literal to what's happening in the scene. So I wrote one for the story of a Dom scene.
Right. Yeah.
And then the other, and then one for Story of a Chef. And then they also asked me for a Celine Dion 90s ballad version of the song. And my good friend Paul Umbach used to work over at Jive Records back in the 90s with Britney Spears and all that kind of stuff. So I'm like, Paul, you're the guy. You're going to help me do this. And so we gave them three versions. They used them in the film. I got to Zoom call with the directors and, you know, one of the Daniels explained to me how he used a couple lines from Story of a Girl as dialogue. So, I mean, for me, it's like, you know, I couldn't even ever imagine those things all happening. And then, you know, I saw it in a theater too, and it was just an amazing thrill of an experience. So it's kind of crazy, really.
That's the coolest thing. That Matt just saw it a couple days ago for the first time. I've been telling him to watch it for a long time.
Well, the thing that I think what I read was also that, because they started writing that script in 2016.
Yeah.
And that when they quoted the song, that was in the very first draft as just a filler line. Like, oh, this we'll put something else here. And then over the 7 years, they're just like, I don't know. We can't come up with anything better than the clothes never wear as well the next day and your hair never falls in quite the same way.
Yeah.
I guess we got to reach out to this guy to get permission.
Oh, it's great. Thank goodness that happened.
Yeah. So cool, man. Yeah. Congratulations on that. And just the success of the song in general, this song lives on. You still hear this song at the grocery store or at a restaurant, or that's like all these bands got to know over the years. Gin Blossoms are a good example. Like those songs, you hear them everywhere. They'll live on after us. And I think that's pretty cool that, you know, that you have a song like that. So cool. But we're not here actually today to talk about about Absolutely.
Yeah. Enough about Story of a Girl.
We're here to actually talk about another really catchy song from the band Stroke Nine called Little Black Backpack. And you chose this song, and it feels like, I don't know your touring schedule from that era or whatever, but it feels like you guys would have at least played some shows together.
We played a lot of shows together.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of shows, and we had a lot of fun. I got to tell you really quick here. I was talking to Luke, who's the singer in Stroke Nine, and I let him know I was going to do this. And I'm like, give me some cool tidbits, fact or fiction, you know, anything you want to put out there. Because we sort of have this fun, almost like pretend fight on Twitter with each other sometimes. We give each other crap. And for a while, people didn't realize, you know, the people that were paying attention didn't know we were joking around, which was more fun.
Right.
So we were going to punk you guys today. And I was going to come on and I was going to say that I wrote it and I've been suing them for 20 years.
Wow.
And that's why I asked you, Matt. I was like, can we get Luke on? Because I was going to make it seem like I couldn't get him on the phone. And you finally did. And we were going to go at it and argue and it was going to be awesome. But we decided not to.
Well.
But anyway.
Well, Yeah, that's incredible. And this song, this is a really good song. I think I've talked about this. Matt knows what I'm going to talk about. It's another thing for the bingo card of One Hit Thunder. But I had this era, teenagers, late teen, where I was a little bit too cool for anything that was on the radio. I liked punk music. And if it was on the radio, 9 days being an exception because I had your actual CD. You won me over. You won over the punk.
Okay.
But
nice.
So this Little Black Backpack song, I remember it, but I had to go back and like kind of rediscover it now in preparation for this episode. And I got to say a couple things. One, it's really good. Second of all, it's really strange how this song starts like it's going to be some ballad and then speeds up and it's just a completely different song and then goes back. It feels like different songs just smashed into each other, but somehow it works.
I happened to watch a live video of them playing on Kimmel, and he almost gives a look at the end of the verse as if it was written with that very intention to like punk you out into thinking that this was like a power ballad. Yeah. And then it's like this angry piss off song secretly. It's actually kind of brilliant. I one of the one hit thunder firsts here. I think this is the first time we've talked about a band that, according to Wikipedia, formed as a high school class project.
Like a rock band, or what was like a rock band situation, or
It was a rock band class that they took in high school.
That's pretty cool way to start a band.
You know what? There's another very famous band that formed in almost the same way.
Is it 9 Days?
It's not. It's I don't know how old. I think I'm a bit older than you guys, but you guys know the Wiggles.
Yeah.
Yes.
Of course.
All right. The Wiggles started as a college project, so I always knew there was a connection between Stroke 9 and the Wiggles.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Wow. I think that's us announcing the Wiggles Stroke 9 tour of 2023. Yeah. We can lock that in.
Yeah. So the intro, and then it eventually comes back, and it is a major fake out. I would imagine it's such a fake out that it's surprising to me that it became a radio hit, unless the fake out part that I'm calling it was such the sound of radio at that time that it sucked people in and then they stuck with it, you know, because I almost think that like if I were listening to that and the radio came on and it was this ballady mid-tempo thing, I might change the channel as someone who likes something more like what the song actually is. Yeah, it's a little bit strange, but yeah.
It is interesting, and you know, it's funny too, because I mean, I toured with those guys for a long time, and when you tour together, you hear each other like from the dressing room or across the hall or whatever, you know. When you listen to that song now, and a couple of their songs, the verse could be Toad the Wet Sprocket.
Sure.
Yeah. Right? And in a good way. I love Toad the Wet Sprocket, hell, but I'm like, wow, I would not have thought that at the time, because you're so keyed into, like you said, with radio, what's happening, what's modern. And although Toad the Wet Sprocket was certainly not an old band at the time, their radio presence wasn't so much there at that time. But and then the chorus kicks in. And they were sort of trying to do a Dave Matthews thing, switching from, you know, the waltz feel in the verses and then changing it up. But yeah, it's a super interesting arrangement. And I remember when we were touring, our sound guy was like, what the hell are they doing? What is that?
Yeah, it's that the chorus of it sounds to me like something Butch Walker-ish. It reminds me of, like, you know, there were a lot of bands that Butch produced and was in around that era that had that sound, that it's almost pop punk music, but not. It's still like top 40 friendly, but it's really good, and also a very well-placed falsetto in the pre-chorus, which is an undeniable hook in this song when he goes to that. So it's kind of got it all.
For sure.
It's kind of
Well, the other thing that kind of jumped out at me, and I didn't sit down and physically count this out, but I think that this song's chorus has more lyrics than the verses and bridge combined. It is such a wordy, long chorus, but we've talked about that before on the show, that part of the fun of some of those songs is it's like, it's one of those songs that's kind of cool if you know every word to the chorus, right? Because it's like, it's almost like a tongue twister throughout some of it.
Oh, yeah. It's like the 1 week from the Bare Naked Ladies. Like, if you sing that whole, the verses in that one, that was a challenge. Yeah, definitely.
And I love the lyrics themselves are percussive in a way.
Yeah.
Little black backpack back. Like it's like you're playing, you know, some sort of percussion instrument with your mouth. It's fun to sing along. I think that any of us could have said this song's going to be a hit the first time we heard that chorus, probably, right?
And but it's a wild song to be a hit that has a chorus that contains a lyric that's like, I don't want to tango with you. I'd rather tangle with him. I'm going to bash his head in.
Yeah.
That is a wild chorus.
The chorus, look, it's a hit, right? So we all know the chorus is great. But you're so on the money. The verse is almost like, it's this meandering, you know, does it, what is he even talking about here? And it's just this sonic, nice little thing, but really it's the chorus, yeah. You know, like yeah. You're saying it's brilliant. And the, like you're saying, the percussiveness of the lyrics that, and I love the tag at the end, don't expect, and I won't even say it right now. Don't expect to get your bloody black backpack back. There's yeah. no way he got that right the first time.
No.
But it's so good. It's such a great line. It's a great hook. And of course, if you were around in the mid 90s or whatever, like if you were in your 20s, those little black backpacks were everywhere.
Yeah.
You know? And, it resonated.
And it resonates to anyone, which, you know, I guess you, I interpret this as whoever this love interest is in the song, it's going after their ex-boyfriend, right? Is that what's going on in these lyrics? I haven't really deciphered them, but
that's what it seems like is happening.
Right. And yeah. That fantasy or whatever, when someone, you know, is a jerk to someone you care about or whatever, right. Even if you're not, I hope that no one's going to go out and be violent, but that at least getting that aggression out via song, via singing along to something, to that will appeal to so many people. Like that's just another
yeah.
reason why.
Listen, it's a pop culture moment for sure in the backpack part, but then it's this general sort of aggro guy thing, you know.
Yes.
Like of course you're gonna want to beat the crap out of somebody who, you know, is whatever, messing with your girlfriend or jealous or whatever.
Right.
But so I should throw this out there because I got to my own Wikipedia from Luke, that is, and the on the demo version, which you can hear on Spotify, the actual lyric was, I don't know if I can use this word, but I'll just say, I want to smash his effing head in.
You can curse on here. Go
for yeah, it. You want to smash his fucking head in. It got sanitized for the major label release, but
right.
Yeah,
that's even more aggressive. I'm surprised that probably yeah. would have made the song even bigger. Actually, like
it's bleep it out. Yeah,
keep in mind this song is hitting at the same time as Limp Bizkit is probably the mm-hmm. biggest band in the world, so they weren't holding back.
Yeah. No. No.
Yeah, this was the same time as that Fuck It song that we've covered show
true.
By Iman. Like,
yeah,
it was,
right.
That's
it was
right,
fine.
Yeah. Oh my God, I remember that.
I got to tell you guys, I went to the music video for this song, and Matt, I got to start doing this every episode because I was laughing out loud over here at some of the comments on the music video, and some of them I thought were very conversation starters. So I want to talk about some of these comments on the music video.
Oh boy, okay.
Which they just recently in the past couple of years re-uploaded like an HD version of it because
okay.
You know, it would have been all you see a lot of videos from that time. They're kind of grainy on YouTube now or whatever. But
yeah.
I thought this was a good one. Chase James 6614 said, "The 90s wasn't a decade, it was an emotion." Which it's like that is deep, man. That's yeah. good. I think that
it's a good comment for a song that peaked in February of 2000. But
right,
it came out in 99. It just caught the end.
Yeah.
Blaine Barnett 8449 said, "I miss the 90s. What the hell do kids listen to these days while growing up?" I just think it's funny to assume that this was the only song. There were two responses to that, by the way. One said JoJo Siwa, and the other one said Olivia Rodrigo. So that's what kids are listening
yeah.
to now.
But the other thing, too, is the 90s are, as a decade, it's just like any other decade. The first half of the 90s are totally different than the second half
sure.
of the 90s.
Sure.
So you can't just say the 90s. I mean, they are it's so bifurcated, to use a $10 word there. And that second half is when we, you know, kind of caught the tail end of that. And our record didn't come out till 2000. And that was our doom. But anyway, yeah. But these guys, this was a late 90s song for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to get off track for a second here. But John, do you or Stroke Nine? Matt and I discussed this theory before about some bands that we liked and bands that we've covered on One Hit Thunder. That do you think that music got super way more dark on the radio and stuff after 9/11? Did that hurt like more up tempo or poppy bands? Did, because it seems like a lot of what were hits for a year or two after that were just a lot darker music. Have you ever thought about that or noticed that?
Yeah, I definitely have. And, you know, again, I could have a whole side conversation, but, you know, did you guys happen to read the book Meet Me in the Bathroom or see the documentary that just came out about the New York City scene with the Strokes and Karen O? And
I know about
it. But I'm aware of this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I read, again, a long story short, there was a whole scene of music happening. It's really the Strokes were the probably the biggest band to come out of it. And when I read that book and then certainly saw the documentary, but I realized that music was changing anyway. Mm-hmm. And 9/11 kind of, I'm sure it definitely had a big impact, but it was shifting regardless. And bands like, you know, like 9 Days and probably Stroke Nine, and I could keep going on and on, but any of those sort of rock bands or the alt rock bands from the late 90s that had success at radio, mainstream success. Mm-hmm. If you just go down the list, I mean, you can literally see that they fell off a cliff. It just ended and it was wacky. I mean, it just abruptly was over. So I'm sure 9/11 played a part in that, but there was already a whole thing happening that was just waiting for its moment to kind of bubble up. And I think that's really what it was.
You know, yeah, I think that it's, I do think that it's like a twofold piece, right? Because people want to listen to the music that reflects the mood that they're in. So it's mm-hmm. like, while this like Strokes, even all of the bands, the White Stripes, the Hives, all of these bands are making their records, and all those bands have been around since the late 90s. They were recording records at the exact same time that everyone else was.
Yeah.
But like the example I always use is like, look at a Blink-182 video. Like, look at the Blink-182 video released in the summer of 2001, the rock show and mm-hmm. First Date, and there are these like bright, vivid colors and they're goofy yeah. videos. And then the video in like October of 2021 yeah. is Stay Together for the Kids, where it's black and white and they're like surrounded by rubble, and it's a real like yeah. sad, moody song. So I think that there was something about this like, that like era of the bands and that throwback to the garage sound. There was also just this like feeling, all of those songs have this almost feeling of like apathetic depression. And yeah. like, I think that like they were already having this underground scene that was starting to pop off. And then it was just like, oh, the door has opened for the exact right time for people to want to listen to music that just feels hopeless.
Like, it's different. Yeah, it was a shift. Absolutely. No pun intended.
It's a good thing the Strokes are good. That's all I got to say. I like the Strokes, and it's a good thing they're good, because when you read their story of like where they came from and how they started, they would be the ultimate band I would hate. They were all rich kids that met at a like school for rich kids in like Switzerland, and they had like band photos looking like models before they recorded a song and like everything about them, like, but then it's like, damn it, they're good though. how are they good?
You couldn't build a more perfect rock band in 2001 than them. I mean, literally everything about it was perfect, but they were good. So,
that Last Night video is still, I remember being in high school watching that video and just being like, these are the coolest dudes I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Like just shooting a video live, not caring that they're screwing up, like the set's falling apart around them. Right. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah. They're from New York. New York needed to have a comeback. I mean, they had everything going for them, but I'm not talking shit. They're actually good. They're several of my friends' favorite band ever, and I'm like, yeah, I get it. It's hard for me to get past that thing, but whatever. It's fine.
Yeah, I get it.
Back to Stroke Nine a little bit. So Stroke Nine had this song, which it's very, very much on the border of being able to even talk about this song on the show, Matt, because it hit a peak of number 39 on the Hot 100. So it just got there. We sometimes bend the rules for bands like Hum and stuff on here before. But 39, unlike Story of a Girl, which went all the way to number 6 on the Billboard Hot 100 and number 1 on the mainstream top 40. Congratulations, man.
Thank you. Yes.
You got the bragging rights against your buds there.
Yeah, they gave us a lot of crap, so we'll at least take that.
But yeah, they did. I mean, they released a follow-up single with Letters, which I do think is a really good song. I actually think Washing and Wondering on this record really should have been a single. I think it's a really good, catchy song. And there are some people who are going to be like, you motherfuckers, Stroke Nine's not a one-hit wonder. What about Kick Some Ass?
Well,
which did not chart very well. You just love that song because it's used beautifully in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. But
Well, I also want to note, before we get on to that second album, I want to note that this album, this Nasty Little Thoughts album from Stroke Nine, was produced by Jerry Harrison from the Talking Heads and Rupert Hine. Yeah. Like, monster producers produced this thing. That's pretty cool.
I'm a huge Talking Heads fan, so the fact that they got to work with Jerry Harrison is pretty freaking awesome.
I wouldn't have guessed that from the sound of the music at all. Like, it's like, I guess this song is quirky. It is. That's the first thing we talked about with the song is the quirkiness, but it's just not in the way that I think of, like, Talking Heads.
You would never. To me, there's nothing there that would you'd go, oh, that's Jerry Harrison,
right.
But I think he did. I didn't look this up, but I just remember at the time he was producing a lot of more mainstream bands like that. I could be wrong, but I know his. I remember his name coming up quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I just want to go back because when we toured with them, the highlight of their show for me was the song Letters. I just loved that song.
Yeah,
I think it's a great song. And my only critique would have been it should have started with the verse. Just come right in here, dear, alone with all. It should have just come right in with that. So I just wanted to get that out there now, finally, 22 years later.
That's a good point. And I'm gonna throw this right back to you. But there's something to be said about songs that just kick off with the words. You know what I mean? And I think absolutely that's another part of it is like the very first thing you hear when you put that song on is your voice for a couple seconds. And it's like it's you also get to avoid the DJ having to talk over top of your great intro.
Oh, yeah. We ruined it for those guys.
That's a good point about that Letters song, though, because I obviously wasn't familiar with that song. And it took me getting like a minute and a half into the song to be like, oh, this is good. This song is good.
It's a great song, and it's almost like the bridge. It's like the arrangement's a little funky on it in a good way, but there's almost two bridges in it. And the first one, again, going back to Toad the Wet Sprocket, I was like, that's Toad the Wet Sprocket. There's some stuff there, but it's a great song.
Right. So I guess did they appear as a band in the film Ed TV? Because I know their music was in it. I think they are actually in the movie. Is that right?
I actually don't
know
that.
I have to go back to the one time I saw Ed TV.
Yeah, I don't know.
1997 or whatever.
I think they are. I think they're in it.
Is that part of like their profile on something, right? Didn't they put that on there? That they're, I don't remember what it is, but actors in Ed TV or something like that, I remember.
Yeah.
I didn't know if they were just joking around or not.
No, I think they're actually in it. They released that second album, which looked like a burnt CDR. Which
so many bands did that, man. That was a thing.
Well, I remember that I had a Sublime CD that was like that. It was like an acoustic Sublime CD. But a year later, System of a Down. So actually, Stroke Nine did it before System of a Down did it. But I wonder if that isn't a bad thing. You know, I loved going to a record store. I mean, Matt still collects CDs. I don't do that anymore. Unfortunately, I'll buy a record here and there, but it was fun to buy a CD and like look at the art and everything. I wonder if that was maybe a bad call on their part. I get the joke, but I don't know.
It's a good point. You know, I grew up in the era of vinyl. So for me, CDs were always like, CD, you know, it was already a step down. So I don't know. I wonder, I never thought about that, but you know, I will say, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of bands, when we were touring with a lot of bands, and I know what happened to us and getting to know the guys in Stroke Nine, we all had, or at least I think we're still friends now because we share a similar sense of humor, a little self-deprecating sense of humor. So those guys are hysterically funny. And I think that that didn't maybe translate in that time because, you know, it was a different era where you had to present like being a rock band. So to me, that album and that whole idea of like, you know, rip this off, it's totally their sense of humor.
Right.
I think that their sense of humor comes through more in a song like Kick Some Ass.
You know
what I mean? Where he's screaming at the top of his lungs, but I'm really just a sensitive artist. Like, it's stuff like that. It's like, it's very funny.
I knew that song, and I didn't know it from Jay and Silent Bob. Like, I wasn't a big fan of that movie, but I somewhere in the world, I've heard that song right. here and there, whether maybe it was on the radio or something. I knew that I'm really just a sensitive artist part of the song. I remembered that. And it is, once again, I guess that is a pretty quirky song. I wasn't so sure about it in the first verse. I'm like, ah. But then once that once that chorus kicks in, and especially the screamed part at the end, it's also a really good song. I gotta talk about one song, though. I guess you know them well enough to know a lot of their catalog. There was a, they did have a song on this album where I was like, oh, yikes. And it's a song called Do It Again. Do you, are you guys, either of you guys familiar with this song?
I remember Do It Again. Yeah. But.
Oh boy. This song has lyrics like, let me tell you how sexy you are as I'm going down on you in the car. And just when I thought this might get boring, you wake me up in the morning by pouring honey on my body and licking it off. And I'm like, oh, I don't know about this one. And also, I don't know about pouring honey on me. That just sounds gross. And he also makes a lot of sex noises in the song. So maybe they're joking around. I don't know.
I might have skipped over that one every time. Yeah. So I don't know.
Okay. All right, that would have been a strike against them, but we got the firsthand info from John here that Stroke Nine have a good sense of humor. So as long as they're not being serious, if that was Buck Cherry, that would have been serious probably.
It kind of sounds more like R. Kelly, but
yeah, right.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like,
or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room.
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.
By now, I'm sure you've at least heard about Factor, but if you haven't tried it yet, let me tell you as a guy who loves it, now is the time. Enjoy stress-free dining this spring with Factor's chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals that are ready in just 2 minutes. With 35 weekly options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie, plus over 60 add-ons, you'll stay fueled and feel fantastic all day long. Don't wait. Fuel up for your spring goals today with Factor. Factor offers you chef-prepared meals ready in just 2 minutes, so you can spend more time doing what you love this spring. Indulge in gourmet options like filet mignon, shrimp, and fresh veggies without the hassle of prep or cleanup. Customize your weekly meals to fit your schedule perfectly and enjoy the convenience of Factor's no-fuss, no-mess approach. Plus, you can celebrate Earth Day all month long with Factor's low carbon footprint options. Factor is your go-to solution for fast, premium meals, eliminating the need for cooking and empowering you to savor every moment. So head to factormeals.com/onehit50 and use the code onehit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code onehit50, the words one hit and the number 50, at factormeals.com/onehit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Hey, One Hit Thunders, Thunderheads, Thunder Buns. All right, I'll just go with One Hit Thunder listeners. This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song that they have written. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites such as Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of The Beths and Genesis Owusu, and even some of the artists that have been featured on One Hit Thunder. The show is even produced by One Hit Thunder host Chris Fafalius. What more could you possibly ask for? Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday. I guarantee you'll like it, or we'll give you your money back.
Matt, do you have what was going on in the world of music around this time?
I do. So I wrote down a few things. So at the time that this is on the Billboard charts, the number one song in America, you know it, you love it, Savage Garden's I Knew I Loved You Before I Met You was tearing up the charts. Mm-hmm. The top five was What a Girl Wants by Christina Aguilera.
Nice, Pittsburgh
Smooth
Girl.
Smooth by Santana. couldn't be stopped.
Oh, the smooth era.
back to One by Brian McKnight. And for the people asking for a Montel Jordan episode, his song Get It On Tonight was somehow at number five on the Hot 100.
I don't even know that song.
I don't know that song either.
I have no clue what that song is.
I can't know.
Was that in the wake? Was that in the wake of This Is How We Do It?
No, it was about 5 years after This Is How We Do It.
Wow. How did he have a top five hit that I don't know?
That's what I mean. Well, I told you, I saw Montel Jordan live one time. He played a 20-minute set. He came out, sang This Is How We Do It, did two more songs, talked about being a born-again Christian, and told us to go to his table to buy his buy his memoir, and then he played This Is How We Do It again, and that was the end
of
the set. Wow. And then a few of the groups that would have been in the same radio station vibe as Stroke Nine that were in the top 40 was Filter, Take a Picture was up mm-hmm. there, Smash Mouth, Then the Morning Comes, Blink-182, All the Small Things, Third Eye Blind, Never Let You Go, Foo Fighters, Learn to Fly, Counting Crows, Hanging Around, The Goo Goo Dolls, Black Balloon, and Sugar Ray's Falls Apart were all in the top 40 at that time as well.
Wow.
That's a good crop of songs right there. That's good stuff.
And that's a pretty rock heavy top 40.
Yeah,
like,
you
usually
don't
top
that.
40 you get like two or three rock songs pop in and a bunch of like pop and R&B and like a way more of like that leaning side of the spectrum.
Yeah,
I think that time period, that's the way it was. There were a lot more bands and rock bands that were on main, that were crossing over from rock. Because every, other than maybe the Goo Goo Dolls and maybe even them, all those bands got played on rock radio alongside Rage Against the Machine and Limp Bizkit. You would hear all that stuff.
Right.
And then they'd cross over to top 40. So it was a great time. If you were into, just rock music in general.
All right. So we better decide, we're Stroke Nine, One Hit Blunders, or did they bring the One Hit Thunder? We'll let John go first. We'll see if he's going to take it, if he's going to call his friends out or not.
Oh, yeah. So it's definitely a thunder.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on. Yeah. Listen, they're a great band. They hit is undeniable. It's quirky. It's there's nothing like it in mm-hmm. that way. It's just this quirky song. So many of these big hits like that get written in these moments where you're almost joking or you you got an idea for something, you're like, this is ridiculous. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden everybody stops and goes, that's actually pretty cool. And yeah. then before you know it, you've got a hit. But we said it already. Letters, Washington Wonder, and they have great songs after it. And I say they're a thunder for sure.
How about you, Matt?
I'm going to agree. I mean, I have most of their albums. I was a pretty big Stroke Nine fan. So, they have great songs. We've talked about this before. Sometimes the risky, weird move is what gets people talking. We've talked about, if you're a rapper, having a unique voice that you rap in that sets you apart from everybody else. Mm-hmm. I think doing kind of this weird fake out that this song does and kind of like genre hopping all over the place for 4 minutes, like that's a risky move. And to use that as your lead single is a real risky move. So I dig it.
All right. Before I put my thunder or blunder out there, there's a couple other YouTube comments I want to mention real quick before I forget. One, Arizi08 said, and this made me laugh, and then I listened to it and I'm like, oh, wait a second, they're right. They said, sounds like Metallica's Nothing Else Matters. And I was like, what?
Oh.
And then I went to that, the ballady slow part, and I'm like, oh my God, it does kind of sound like Nothing Else Matters. That's crazy. It's very, you got to be listening for it. But yeah.
I can hear it in my head right now. Okay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked if that was somewhat intentional. If they're like, we need this to sound ballady.
Sure.
Well, was there a thing just recently with Weezer? What was it, Sanitarium, that from Metallica, that he realized the sweater song was the same as Metallica. Oh,
yeah.
Look that one up.
It happens. I mean,
it happens.
There's only so many chords in the world.
I've probably done it 50 times. So I'm not saying that talking shit. I'm just saying, like, oh, that does kind of sound like that.
Yeah, it does.
A couple other funny things. This one made me laugh out loud. It was, I'm 35 and my brother is 38. He says he literally doesn't remember this song. I still think he's trolling me. I just thought it was funny that literally did not need to be put in there. He could just not remember the song. He literally doesn't remember this song. And Pleasant Screams 1978 said, if this was released today, it would be all controversial and people would be whining. Like, okay, I guess the world's just too woke for Stroke 9.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Woke 9.
Here we go. They are punk.
Yeah.
Woke 9.
They're not ready for Woke 9. Okay, I say Thunder. I think this song's really good. And, you know, there were a few other songs I like. And I don't know. Yeah, I say Thunder. I think it's Thunders all around for Stroke 9.
I agree.
All right. Well, before we fully sign off, John, anything going on with 9 Days that you want to promote?
I'm actually doing a bunch of solo stuff, which sounds terrible. Not that the music sounds terrible. It just sounds terrible to say when you're solo stuff. But I'm doing a bunch of things on my own right now. And there's a song that'll be out by the time you air this, where as an artist, his name is Jordy, and he did an interpolation of Story of a Girl, and he flipped it to Story of a Boy. So get ready for that one. It's a great song. So,
nice.
Yeah. And I just want to throw this out there to just sort of, like, you know, emphasize the one hit thunder of Stroke 9. And I'm being totally sincere. They've put out a string of singles in the past year, and they're so freaking good. I was telling them, like, this, you guys are getting better with age. So if you did like their old albums, go check out the new stuff. It's great.
Yeah, and we found that with a few bands. I remember we felt that way with American Hi-Fi, that almost everything they put out after Flavor of the Week were like, these are way better songs than Flavor of the Week.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you're not stuck kind of dealing with the machine or trying to be mainstream, you just kind of, you do your thing, and it's great.
In One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Othayos of the bands Punchline Pack and Another Cheetah, and produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net. Underneath me, you're hearing Maybe I'm Wrong off the Punchline album Just Say Yes. Visit punchline.com for merch, tour dates, and news. We're on Patreon now. Become a patron and get bonus content, early episodes, and a chance to vote on future episodes at patreon.com/OHTpodcast. Do you want to start a podcast? Contact Chris or myself at wenowpodcasting.com for how we can make your show sound as professional as possible. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting app. And tune in next week for more One Hit Thunder.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.